welcome and thank you so much for downloading our little podcast from Italy on a rainy, overcast, drizzly... What's today?
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday, the 7th of September. Summer has come and gone.
It feels like Seattle.
And it's time to do another podcast, I think. We're finishing up a little pause here from the summer to the autumn guests. We did a little work around the house.
And responding to our lovely listeners, and thank you for sending the requests for us to keep the podcast going. This was a great, I got a little Instagram message this morning, and we thought, you know what? They're right. It's time to hit record and give you guys an update. We left, the last podcast was a doozy.
So my name is Jason. You already heard Ashley. Together we run, own, and operate La Tavola Marche, an agriturismo here in the central Italy, which we're still standing.
We also own and operate in a different manner, No Half Measures, our filmmaking and consulting business as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about everything that's been going on out here.
All right, start us off.
All right, so we thought we should start off with the earthquake. And man, we are so incredibly lucky. We not only didn't feel anything, we had no damages. We didn't even know it happened until we woke up and came inside and turned on the good old Facebook kind of thing. And all the messages were flooding in and people checking on us. And it's so overwhelming to think of how many people reached out to us that we've never met or that our friends and family, making sure we're okay.
But we're not the people to reach out to. There's a whole town that's literally been wiped off the map.
So. It is devastating to see the photos. And it's really been interesting to listen to the neighbors and people talk about it. Like I said, we didn't really feel it. It happened at about 3 something in the morning. Then you hear someone like Rosanna, Gaggi's wife, in Fano much farther, and she said she was thrown out of bed. You know, there were all these dramatic stories that you think, were you really? And something that was really interesting that happened, we got a lot of inquiries on where people should send donations, and it was really hard to – I kind of just said the Italian Red Cross, for lack of a better answer, in the sense of here in Italy – You can send money, and there's you have to choose or do both, but it's not a general fund. You can either send it to the region of Umbria or the region of Marche, and they were plastering all over television and whatnot. IBAN, 16-digit bank codes. So it wasn't like an easy, here's a site, go to Save Amatrice, and it was just...
You have to send a wire transfer to this bank account, and it's literally a 16.
And I guess it was a disaster. I guess you could also do it through Tim and some of that, but I get, so we don't have any answers for people except to say that it's going to be a long road ahead. I don't know. It sounds like they're not sure if they're going to rebuild the city or what. And it was the heart of the city. So, and so much of the surrounding earthquakes happen a lot out here. And
yeah, everyone knows we live in earthquake country. Mm-hmm. It's not a secret.
No, Jason is not that he's flippant or doesn't have empathy towards earthquake, but he grew up in San Francisco, and
I'm just used to it.
Yeah, last fall we had a handful of little tremors or jolts. What would you call them? Little earthquakes. And I would freak the F out. I was like, oh my God! All of a sudden, the energy would be pulsing through me, and I'd be like, if I go in the house, oh my God! And Jason was like, nothing even moved on the walls. The glasses are still standing. Like, he'd almost be laughing at me going, this is nothing compared to what I've lived through. But it's just one of the things that happen out here. I mean...
Well, it's really interesting growing up with earthquakes. You hear them and feel them before it comes. And if you know what it sounds like and what it feels like, it's like this really deep... deep sound with a it's like no other like dull roar that you've ever heard, and that's what I hear before the earthquake actually
Maurizio
comes.
Said he thought it was a big thunderstorm happening, and that's what woke him up. He went to go to the bathroom. Yeah, I grew up in Seattle, so it's not the same for me. But
well, we grew up, of course, there was the one in 88 that devastated San Francisco, but then after, for years after, there'd be weekend. I remember growing up, every Friday night for like a month or two, there'd be earthquakes. Like, not big ones, but, you know, you a lot stronger than what we felt here. And you just kind of get I like anything else. I'm just kind of that's what I mean, that's all I know is from growing up in California, there's always been earthquakes.
Well, and there was the big one not that many years ago in L'Aquila.
When we arrived.
Yeah. And do you remember when we looked at properties?
Yeah, because we asked about, so are these seismic, is there reinforcement for the earthquake? And the lady looks at us and goes, they are made of stone. If it's big enough, they all come down. And it's true. Masonry is terrible for earthquakes because it doesn't give.
However, this big old house, she sure takes a beating. We might find some stones on the floor.
Look up. You sleep
We actually, in the last 10 years, have noticed some of the beams kind of...
Well, I don't know.
Not rotating, but there's been movement.
I don't know if that's just wood, what these do over time. I don't know if it's...
I don't know. You know, black mold freaks me out. So these old houses. So moving on, let's chat about our summer. We have to say a huge dankjewel to the Dutch, and they saved our summer. Man, if you guys listen to the podcast, you know that we didn't have much time to get this season going, and we found out late that we were going to be operating and had about quite a month to get the house ready and hopefully get some guests in here. And our neighbors to the far north, they showed up. And cars full of kids. But it was great. We had familiar faces and damn near the whole village of Bloemendaal was here. And it was great. Kids and families are fantastic. I came from a huge, wild, loud Catholic, Irish, half-drunk family, functioning alcoholics. Everyone's yelling at each other and having a good time. And I like it. I like a big house like this filled with people. And most of these families knew each other, so it was great. And it's also absolutely exhausting. Jason was really fun and built for the first time ever.
We built a giant slip and slide.
Awesome.
So I don't know.
How long? Tell the details.
15 meters.
How did you do it?
So all I did is go to the hardware store, got a huge piece of plastic, and we have a tube that comes from, I can turn the pump on in the well, and a huge tube of water comes out.
Well, you have also like a standing, you first tried to do it with a huge standing, kind of like farm
sprinkler,
style
yeah,
sprinkler.
I have a giant, like what you would see in the middle of a giant field sprinkler. I mean, this thing shoots water. I don't know, 50 meters in the air.
But that was the problem. It shot it too far. Yeah. So they went with the hose, the big tube.
And we put it on a little grade and a little bit of... And the kids came up with the soap idea. I never knew to put soap on the slip and slide. But
I didn't even see that one.
Yeah, they had a blast.
It was really fun. And then you'd hear him call for Jason, slip and slide.
To turn the pump back on. And so we got to do stuff like that because when you have big groups, it's just easier to coordinate stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it was really fun because we could do like bistecca night where we did huge bistecca fiorentinas for the parents and like meat pops for the kids, just like grilled sausages and things like
that. Well, the kids outnumbered the parents.
That big time. We found out three kids is cool up in Holland, but four right now, that's hot. It's hot. So big families. And like we said, it's a blast. But also then you come around the corner and you're like, why are the children using the apples to have a full-on war? There's so many things they could do, but yet they're taking the premature apples off the trees, half eating them, which I don't even know why they would do it.
They ate them the whole week. I'm like, you guys, those are so starchy still. They're not ready yet.
I have no idea what they were doing. They're like, and then they would have these huge apple fights, or they would ask for a bucket and think they were doing something really nice, and they would pick all these unripe apples, and it was like, oh my god, there goes our apple tree. Or somehow the pool. The pool is always amazing with children. From the amount of sunscreen slathered on pasty white children from the north.
to the fact that like there's lights on the side of the pool and I don't know.
We swam in there for a month, and you even used the robo to clean the pool, and those lights never went anywhere.
No, for some reason, children love to go up to the pool lights and just rip them off the side of the pool.
To me, I would think I'd be electrocuted just because that seems so dangerous. But their little fingers are so. I don't know. I don't know. They're is drawn to there.
But it's really fun. I mean, it's It's exhausting, but it's fun to have them all. And we ended up having a good summer.
I know you made a makeshift tennis court in the front yard.
Yeah, we made a tennis court.
You were beat horribly by 10-year-olds.
They're good tennis players.
Well, also with having families, we noticed, like Jason said, the menu changes. So you want to have things that not to say that not are as refined, but that are more family friendly and that the kids will like. Because when the children are outnumbering the parents, and we big dinners, we don't have a menu that people choose from. So it's a chef's choice every night, but that means chef's got a hard choice to make.
Well, if, for instance, we had 18 or 20, and it's like 12 kids and 8 adults. So you have to think if we're doing, you know, even though...
Antipasti.
Yeah, those kind of things.
So, and taking things from the garden. So this year, Jason had a bunch of, it was really funny, he had a bunch of round zucchini.
I hated them.
No, they were a gift from Carolyn. Everyone hated them. Except the only way he could think to use them, and every recipe that you'd look up says stuffed zucchini. And he was like, man, I don't want to freaking make stuffed
Basically,
zucchini.
Basically, it's a meatball inside of a round, half of a round zucchini.
Which is kind of Olive Garden-esque, and definitely not what Jason normally would serve ever. And people freaking loved it.
Well, yeah, it goes to my question.
It was hysterical. He would have this beautiful antipasti spread, maybe a fennel and peach salad, something really different, and that's what I mean, a little more refined and just beautiful, and you know, some other great dishes, and then at the end of the meal, and you know, you'd have the whole papa al pomodoro for primo, and you're like, God, that tomatoes taste so good. How'd you get that flavor? And then some sort of meat dish. And then at the end of the meal, they'd say, oh, wow, that stuffed zucchini. How was that done? And you'd think, out of everything, we're going back to the freaking meatball in the little round zucchini. So it just made Jason think.
So that's my question. Do you, for instance, we have beautiful poultry here, but I never make a roasted chicken or a roasted guinea hen or capon or egg. Because what I feel like is people eat a lot of chicken, or that's something that people can do at home. When you come out here, you want something different. So is this really what you want?
Is this really? I know, that was the question. Like,
or is this what you're familiar? Is this what they're familiar with, and therefore they
respond to that?
Respond to that. Because what I want to do when I travel is have things that I've never had before. So if you, well, for instance, I never do carbonara. I just don't like it, and I feel like you can find it at every hokey Italian restaurant from the UK and all over Europe and to America.
But the tragedy is, I'm sure with our eggs from our hens,
it's delicious.
Incredible. And I'm sure the guests would love it. Jason, he's never made it.
I'm really not that good. I don't like it.
Well, you can make it because my brother, that's the one thing taught my brother. but
like matriciana, absolutely yes. Because it's, I don't know, it's everything from the garden, and it's really simple, and it's something that maybe people haven't had as much before.
But what is it people really want?
What is it really people want? Is it that, do you give them what you want eventually? Or is that the thing of, listen, this is why we went into business for ourselves, because in New York, that's what I had to do. It's like, I had to do all that, you know,
give them what they want.
Here, I get to do what I want, and hopefully whoever comes trusts me enough that it'll be good, I guess.
Well, it's funny because your brother says, it's good, it's good.
If it's good,
it's good.
But then, yeah, I talked to my brother, and he wants to go have the car. Oh, I can't wait to have carbonara and bolognese and all that. It's like...
It's interesting. I don't know. So... Send
Not
us your
that
thoughts.
Those things aren't delicious.
No, but Jason's more interested in also doing something like one of the antipasti nights we did the confit. And that is like 2 days and a lot of process. And that is much more, I think, enjoyable for you to watch a guest and savor than the zucchini, stuffed zucchini.
Well, that goes to a whole nother thing. Do they come out here for Frenchy kind of food?
Oh, no. I just mean something that I use that as an example because they had both of those. And something that takes more time.
Well, my thing is, should I do more of those crowd pleaser kind of things? Should I serve you know, meatballs.
You know, they go crazy with bruschetta. Like Popeye, like just the tomatoes.
Like this summer we did it and everyone loves it. And of course it's delicious. We eat it all the time. Mm. But I very rarely would serve just tomato bruschetta, like grilled bread with chopped tomatoes, because it's like, it's delicious. Yes. And I grew the tomatoes, but you can get that everywhere. I want to do something different and something more interesting.
I say pepper it in here and there because it is a crowd pleaser, and then stretch them with something, you know.
Like, I'm not going to serve a liver crostini to a bunch of 12 kids. All the and kids. Adults.
No, exactly.
But
you would have liked to have served.
I would have liked to, because who knows, maybe three or four of the – I know all the adults would like it, but maybe three or four of the kids would. Most of them won't, but – who knows? It, you know, it's better than chicken nuggets, and we have a lot of, yeah.
Well, speaking of things that have been going on and questions Jason has for the listeners, the lawnmower.
Okay, so my rotting lawnmower. So yesterday, I don't know if I just realized it or it just finally did itself in, but I broke the frame. Not even where some of the tubes attached to the frame, but the actual, like, front part of the mechanism where all this forward of the weld that brings the mechanism to cut, and that takes it to it's where the wheels and the mechanism to cut and all that.
The front end
is all welded together. About three centimeters in front of that, there's a break on each side. So I think it's done.
Well, you should also let people know this is not anywhere near new.
Oh, this is mower. 20 years old. We've been keeping this together with baling wire. And,
it was like being held together when we arrived. I think we've talked about it before. Jason has – I've rolled it over flower bed, like a rockery beds. Jason bent the frame. Jason's rolled
you
it.
You bent the cutting mechanism. Yes. It never worked right since.
Whatever. You rolled it down the hill.
Twice.
Yes. I had to tell him to stop trying to catch it.
Anyway.
So Hugh's got a question.
It's done. But what I do have is a Briggs & Stratton vertical shaft 13 horsepower motor that runs beautifully. And what I'm trying to think of is, what can I now do with this? So if anyone's into fabricating stuff and putting stuff together, I wanted to build like a go-kart with it. But then you go online here in Italy to karting. And this is... I think of a go-kart as something you build in your work, you know, in your shop, that you find parts and kind of put it together. And
you're thinking more soapbox almost. Like
with a motor.
Yeah.
Maybe. Think of a small little Formula One car for 12-year-olds that costs thousands of euros.
Hardcore.
I went online to look at, okay, well, I'll get a little frame, you know, I'll put some crappy wheels on it, and I'll find blah, blah. No, that's not how it is done here in Italy. It's like if you want to be a race car driver, you start out when you're 8 years old in these carts, and they're expensive and hardcore. So if anyone has
how would you like to use it?
I would like to use it either what I'm either going to do is find some kind of four wheel frame and a four wheels and a steering wheel that I can put on it to and then put a little cart behind it to haul wood and stuff around. Or if anyone else has another idea, I don't need a log splitter. It's a vertical shaft, so it doesn't the power doesn't come out the side. So you have to put a transmission, some kind of something to make it go power wheels.
You were talking about power washer?
Yeah, we could hook it up to a pressure washer.
That sounds boring. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love
a
good
this
power
is boring
washer.
From 99%. There's one person listening who is interested in this crap, like I am, and we'll have an idea. So email me, Jason.
It's probably my dad.
Jason@latavolamarche.com. If you have any good ideas, and you can point me to a website. I've been doing a little bit of research, but this is a project probably for winter.
Oh, for sure. But BattleBot style. So what else have we been doing? We had, like Jason said, we're on a little break before the fall starts. We've got guests coming tomorrow, actually. We thought, since, as mentioned earlier, that we had a quick start to the season unexpectedly, we painted the entire downstairs because we were not as prepared as we normally are, to be honest. And thankfully, we weren't eating inside and things like that. And most everything has been done outside. So we thought, let's put a fresh coat of white paint.
Yep. So,
and by white paint, Jay, what color, what kind of, you want to get into that?
I was going to get into that. So we live in a very old stone house, and this is Italy. So we go down, first of all,
and deep country.
Deep country. So first of all, when you go to paint, there's the stucco, the last layer, and then starts, you know, chipping away because moisture gets in. Also, we had a problem with around each electrical box where you'd plug, you know, each plug. Something, moisture somehow gets in there, and the cement that's around there just crumbles. So,
well, and we're talking, this house, just as a precursor, was restored in 97.
So it's
time.
Yeah, I mean, these things happen. So first I got to learn how to throw mud, which is you make this cement and you throw it on the wall and have it stick, and then you have to scrape it down to make it level and then put the last layer of stucco on. So I learned how to do all that. I think it came out, for an amateur, it came out not bad.
Jason's becoming a moratore. It's really came out good. And we did it all the stark white, and we were talking about, what color white should we do?
Because it's,
you know, it's cave-like down here. But there's the stone, and we were thinking kind of a stony white would be nice. Pebbly white, because it's something that would go with the stone but not be too bright. And we've got a lot of, you know, we've had it be kind of a pale yellow. And so it wouldn't be too much of a dramatic difference, but something nice. So Jason goes into the paint shop, and it's a legit paint shop.
It's a giant, for out here, it's a giant, like, commercial. They have, you know, the 15 liter buckets of paint, and it's for people, like, painters go in there. I asked for the color wheel.
I'll take the swatch. And he brings it home, and I'm like, where the hell's the whites? And he's like, this is the color wheel. And I said, well, where the hell's the whites? He's like, we realized all they had. Well, of course, there were some dark colors and this and that, but it was damn near 90% pastels, shades of pinks and pales,
and
yellows,
oranges. Think
and
Italy
oranges.
Colors, yes. Right? The pastel-y, like, you can have any color like that.
And so it was like, what the hell, where's white? So then we go in, and I'm just surprised because I'm thinking you must not have gotten the right thing. I don't know. And we go in there and we're like, we'd like to do white. And they say, great, here's the bucket. There was no 50 shades of white, no eggshell, luminescent, bright white, off white, anything. It was... Here's your bucket O white. Bucket O Bianco.
It's white.
And it is bright white. So I'm a little bit nervous for fingerprints and things like that because we're not used to it. But it
I'm
looks
also
good.
Nervous for having white in a kitchen.
That's kind of what I mean too. Just the
because here you can buy here the paint is not washable. You can get washable paint, but it's not latex based at all here. And
weirdly you have to add water to it.
Yeah, you have to dilute it with water. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I'm used to latex based paint that's totally washable here. No. So to do the whole kitchen in washable paint is really expensive.
Yeah. So we didn't. And we did the dining room, living room area, kitchen, our place. It feels good. So another one off the list, we would have been jarring tomatoes way more than we expected to. We had a smaller garden this year, Jason and Gaji.
Planted half.
Yeah, but freaking.
Half did really well. The tomatoes did well.
Did really well.
Beans did not do well this year. Onions did great.
Always.
Zucchini, half and half.
The round ones did excellent.
Pumpkins didn't do very well. Peppers didn't do very well.
No.
But tomatoes did okay. We
yeah,
did get
the cuore di bue.
Cuore di bue.
Bue. The heart of the bull. Those are so good, too.
But we have plenty of jars this year. We got our onions down. We did I planted two jalapeno plants because we love Mexican salsa, and it's just not here. So we have to grow our
own cilantro.
Coriander, and our own jalapeno peppers. And that the jalapenos did great.
Mm-hmm.
I think the peppers should have done better. I just got bad. I think I got bad peppers.
Weak
or just
peppers?
Didn't, I don't know.
Or planting them on a
planted them
snap.
Wrong. I don't know.
Well, also, it is hunting season.
Hunting season opened.
Gaji's in full form. You hear the calls out in the field.
Yeah.
Oh! Hey!
Alessio! Oh! So, you hear the packs of the crazy hunting dogs barking, and the guys screaming at each other. Not a lot of gunshots yet.
No. The other afternoon I heard some, and it caught my ear, but...
Hunting season's
over. And speaking of hunting season, I wish we had a gun. PETA people, relax. But we saw the freaking fox literally trying to eat the rooster in front of us. And in the middle of the afternoon, I couldn't believe it. We were gone for a couple days. The chickens were in the coop, came back, let them out for the afternoon. And that same freaking very afternoon, the fox is back trying to attack the rooster. I come around the corner and I'm screaming Jason when all I really wanted to scream was, get the gun. And it was like we're trying to throw a rock at him. And thankfully, Jason was able to scare him away, and he dropped the rooster and just kind of gave him a good scare. But now we have to keep the chickens in the coop, and I don't know. This fox was bigger than expected.
Hopefully with the hunters coming out right now and the dogs being around, hopefully that'll keep the fox more tonight.
Because this guy was waiting.
Yeah, he was waiting. But now in the morning and in the afternoon, there's going to be hunters. So
that's true.
That might keep the fox more to his knock because he's ballsy.
Mm-hmm.
He is really ballsy.
Freaking 4:30. Yeah. So we were talking about the jarring and pickling, and I think this would be a great segue into 2017 because we are really excited. Next August, we're going to offer 2 preserving workshops on preserving, pickling, and jarring, and we'll do like Jason was saying, like some of the pickled peppers or pickled green beans. We're going to talk about pickling versus pasteurizing.
All about jarring. So pasteurization, where you put the jars into the bath of hot water and boil them, and that you do for some things. And then we'll talk about the pickling, how you can. A different method of jarring where you heat the jars, the liquid, but keep the the main ingredient cold, pour them all together, and that can create the seal as well. We're going to do preserving of fruit and also
confit.
And confit, so preserving under fat, and that's another way of preservation where you cook something in fat really, really slowly and keep it in there, and that layer of fat on top does not let air get in, so that's one of the things you need for bacteria's oxygen.
And everyone has asked, from the guests to online questions, how we jar our tomatoes.
We'll do it together.
So this is it. We're going to do both passata and in pieces. So you'll get a bit of both. And
Whatever's coming off the garden.
Exactly.
We'll pickle and jar and preserve and put up, and we'll make it into a weekend, 3 days.
So check out the website, letavlamarque.com. I've started to update the calendar for 2017, and that is on there now. We've got 2 workshop weekends set up for that, and I think it'll be a blast, something totally different. And one new course that isn't on the website yet that Jason is really excited about.
Yeah, I think we're going to buy a gelato machine. So I'm inspired by our friends at Gelateria Maki in Fano, and they have it's a professional gelato machine, but it only makes 1 kilo at a time. So he has this, but he has giant ones that make, 50 kilos at a time. But I think it'll be fun to add in a new course, something to do in the summer. I've always wanted to do gelatos and sorbets, and I think it's just such a nice addition to the dinners and pizza nights and everything.
This is,
and it's so easy, and we have so much stuff coming out of it. I mean,
and this is for someone who maybe isn't normally interested in a cooking class. This is a science.
It's a science. So it's really interesting the way that he taught me. It's really a formula, and you plug in the sugar, fat contents, and a couple of other things into this formula, and that spits out the amounts of each one. So it's really cool. Like if you want to make strawberry gelato, what you have to do is mush up strawberries and then put it on this little instrument that measures its sugar content, kind of the same instrument that the winemakers have. And that's how you get the sugar content. So, it's the ratio of sugar to fat to – I forget. It's been a while since
I got it. It's like science,
it's
equations.
It's like science and stuff.
And
but it's really, really interesting how if you just follow this formula, it comes out every single time. And I didn't know gelato was like that at all.
So we're going to play with some of the classes and do it where we kind of do a few different styles of gelato as a tasting. We'll start incorporating it into desserts and the other cooking classes.
Well, I'm really pumped about sorbets too, because you can make a sorbet out of like Antonio showed us. Absolutely anything.
A few years ago, we did. Antonio from Maki came, and we did a really cool gelato course and did things like a beer sorbet, and which I loved, and have that with the, you know, some nuts and things like that. And we did the tomato. And
he did cheese. He did a gorgonzola, I believe. Mm-hmm. Just really anything you can think of, you can make a gelato out of. Some I dig, some I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the God's honest. Like, some of them, you're like,
not going to do that again.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm sure.
I wasn't into the gorgonzola one. But
oh, I don't like gorgonzola in general.
Me neither. But the like I said, the beer is so interesting. I wouldn't have ever thought that that would be so delicious.
Or you can do one that's almost like a, you can do a little bit of sorbet, like an intermezzo, like a
gazpacho.
Gazpacho sorbet. So you just do a tomato, cucumber, basil. Or they don't put basil in gazpacho.
Oh.
Tomato, cucumber, lemon juice kind of thing with a little bit of olive oil over the top. And it's like a little intermezzo, you know.
I think it's going to be fun.
I think it'll be fun, too. We'll see how big this machine, I think, is big.
I think we'll start doing it with pizza night, too.
We'll see. I got to get it and practice.
And, well, before jumping too ahead in 2017, also, we still have our Forage Slaughter Butcher this year at the end of October, the 25th through the 30th. A few spaces are still available, so check that out on the website. You can see the video. And
we've had a good amount of rain this
yeah,
August,
I think it's going to be a good mushroom and truffle
I
season. So check out some of our fall foraging packages because it is going to be a good one. And the middle, I don't have a calendar in front of me right now, but the middle weekend in October, don't forget as well, not only is it the White Truffle Festival in Sant'Angelo, but one of my favorites,
the Moto
Raduno. And I'm going to have to repost that video soon.
It's the motorcycle rally in Sant'Angelo, and it attracts thousands. Like, this little village gets thousands and thousands. It's fun. It's really fun.
And it's not a wild, like, Sturgis, crazy, horrible thing. It's just so much fun to see these big bikers and or beautiful Italians in their outfits, in their whole racing gear.
Germans, Italians.
Drinking wine, yeah. Eating truffles. And it's just fantastic.
It's fun. People come from all over.
Yeah, so we're really excited about 2017. We're working on the calendar, like we said. Check back. We've got some spring packages on there. And the like we said, the jarring and preserving, we're going to be doing some other really fun things, a winemaker's dinner throughout the summer where you guys will have a really cool chance to have a intimate one-on-one dinner with a, well, not one-on-one, but the house. We'll eat with a local winemaker and you guys can ask them all your questions and we'll do a beautiful pairing of dinner with the wines and just make a really nice evening of it.
Well, I think it's really cool for someone who really, really digs wine and wants to talk to someone who actually
is passionate
and makes the wine. Because it's one thing in talking to a sommelier who knows about wine. It's a whole other thing to basically talk to a guy who grows the grapes and then makes the wine. It's a totally different conversation.
Knowing many winemakers, knowing how busy they are. Also, even when you stop in for a wine tasting, they'll give you their time as much as they can. But they're in the middle of their work day as well out here. So for them to come to our kitchen and into the dining room and they're able to relax and they're able to step away from the work for a little bit, enjoy a meal, have a great evening. And I think it'll be really fun. I'm excited. We're going to hopefully start with Terra Cruda.
Yeah. The thing I love about these guys is that first and foremost, they're farmers. They're like,
that's what I mean.
They're just, they're agricultural people. So it's not this snooty thing of they're sitting there with, you know, eyedroppers and putting it on. No. These guys have red stained hands and they've been in their, you know, the cantina, the laboratorios, you know, in the afternoon, because in the morning they were looking at all the vines. I mean, they're really agricultural people.
That when you show up for a wine tasting at someone's winery here, not only most likely are you at their home, but you are at 100% at their office. So they are happy to see you and share their wine and story, but they have shit to do. Like, Juicy's always so kind, but then I feel bad because I'm like, man, I know that guy's got so much work to do. Yet
well, it's part of the gig.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the gig.
So I'm really excited to get that going. So we've got some fun things coming and a few that we're not ready quite to announce, but check back. And you guys, thank you so much for sticking with us. Check our website as well. If you go to NHM blog, the No Half Measures side of our life, you can see some of our videos from summer. I put together a 60 seconds of summer, quick, like a little fun look at what we've been up to. And I'll put a nice longer version together when I have some time. And,
days are getting shorter. The air has changed.
I know. Jason shudders at the thought of turning on the heating.
I get to close the pool, though.
That's true. And we need to order wood.
And we got to order wood. It's that time. It's that we got to talk to Pierangelo.
I know. Well, it's time to get back to work.
Today, we got a big day. We got guests coming tomorrow. So it's the clean through. It's the final clean through the house. And then...
And then we're on until...
Until the end...
Until November. November.
So back to it.
You might not get another podcast till then. you guys are awesome. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on for La Tavola Marque at Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. I'm posting pictures and little stupid videos and boomerangs and stuff every day. LATAVOLAMARCHE.com. And you can find that also for Twitter, Blogspot, all of that, the recipes. You can find more of our films and travels on NHMblog.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at Ashley Bartner. Yep. Check out the website. Visit us. Keep listening. Thank you, guys.
Ciao.
Ciao.